So I would book a once a month time where they could come in, they would call me, I would answer any question. And I didn't care if they were, you know, my competition down the street or three states over.
I think you did that because that's who you are. You're very generous of spirit.
In this episode, you'll get to know Angie Ford, the prolific pianopreneur. And you'll discover how she built a business from just teaching piano in her home to a multi-location daycare with hundreds of employees. I'm Dave Crenshaw, and this is My Success Project. Welcome, friends, to the Dave Crenshaw Success Project. This is a show where I'm teaching my children how to be successful through the life stories of others, but you get to come along for the ride. I'm a best-selling author, and I speak around the world to Fortune 500 companies, and I've taught millions of people how to be successful through my online courses. But I'm a father of three, and my children mean the world to me. So I wanted to create something lasting that would help them succeed. But don't be fooled. This show is for adults, too. It's for you, no matter who you are, because I thought you'd enjoy learning along with my family. In this show, I speak to some of the most successful people I've met throughout my life's journey. Some of the guests you might have heard of through the news or social media, while others have flown under the radar, so to speak, like my guest today. But they still have great stories. And part of what I'm doing is trying to interview people who have balanced success and happiness in their own unique way. As a leadership expert and coach, I've found that success isn't one size fits all. There are infinite numbers of ways that you and I and my kids can become successful. You can find your own path. I also try to find people who have balanced success in multiple areas of their lives, not just financial, not just in their career, because to me, multifaceted success shines like a diamond. It's real success. It's lasting. And that's the kind of success I'd like to help my family and help you find. Before I introduce Angie, there's one thing that I'd like to encourage you to do, and it's not what you probably think. I'm not going to tell you to hit subscribe or like, although that would be great if you did that. What I want you to do is, as you're listening to her story, look for one thing that you can do. If you really want to be successful, look for an action that you can take to be just a little bit like Angie Ford. Not copy her, but take something from her life and make it a part of your life. And if nothing comes to mind, that's fine. I'll help you out in the end. I'll give you a few suggestions. But if you're actively looking for that one thing, you're going to get a lot more out of this interview, and it will change your life. Angie and I, while we've known each other for quite a while, I was her business coach for many years. But in the beginning, prior to meeting her, she started her first business as a piano teacher in her home. I won't spoil the story, but it's a great story. And then she gradually grew it to the Bravo Arts Academy, which is an educational center for children. That was in 2003 in South Ogden, Utah. If you're not familiar with Utah, it's just north of Salt Lake City. And then she quickly grew to a second location in 2007. And then in 2010, she made the decision to expand her business to a full daycare. That led to a third location, creating the largest daycare in northern Utah. And the way that she ran this daycare is unlike anything you've heard or seen before. And here's the most exciting thing. When I reached out to her, she had just sold her business. So now Angie is retired and she's enjoying hobbies and time with her husband and her not four children, not five children, but her six children. Angie, how are you doing?
Hey, I'm good, Dave. Good to see ya.
Yes, I've been really, really looking forward to this interview. You have so much to offer for people listening to this and for my kids. And yeah, I'm just really thrilled because we've known each other for a long time.
A long time.
Yeah. What, do you remember what the year was when we started together?
I was thinking about that. I think it's got to be like 2012 or 2013, something like that.
Yeah.
Doesn't that sound about right?
That sounds about right. I think I was coaching you for about 7 to 8 years.
Mm-hmm.
So we've really gotten to know each other quite well. And what I'm excited about is you have accomplished a dream that I think many people listening to this have, right? To successfully create a business, even a business with multiple locations, you had hundreds of employees, correct? Right?
Yep.
And then you were able to successfully exit it this year.
I know.
And yeah, that's amazing.
I can hardly believe it. It's weird that you're talking about me, quite honestly.
Well, and I had to talk about you because, you know, I have some guests that I would say are well known through the news and stuff like that. You were more under the radar, and yet your story is so compelling, and there's so many wonderful things that people can learn from it. So I always like to start at the beginning of this, all the way to the beginning.
Oh, wow.
Which is, what did you want to be when you grew up? And I'm not talking when you were a kid, right? Because there's always the standard answer, like a veterinarian or whatever. I'm talking more like right. When you were a teenager, you're starting to form ideas about what your future is going to be like. What did you see for your future?
Well, it was like those little kid answers because I wanted to be a teacher. I just wanted to teach. I loved kids and I could just see me being in a classroom and, you know, all the kids calling you Mrs. So-and-so, and I loved it. And so it kind of just stuck with me. I actually stayed that course. So it was fun.
Yeah. So I'm assuming there was a teacher that you had that inspired, that you said, I want to be like that.
Yeah. I mean, I loved school, so I loved a lot of my school teachers, but kind of what drove the teaching thing all the way is I wanted to teach piano to kids. And I had a few first piano teachers that they're just like your inspiration of, I want to be like you when I grow up. You're so awesome. And so I just kind of went a little bit bigger than they did.
Yeah. And so in the beginning, the idea of being an entrepreneur, being a business owner, wasn't even on your radar, right?
No, not at all. In fact, when I got married to my husband, he was thinking about going to dental school. So I thought I was going to be a dentist's wife and I was going to stay at home and teach kids piano in the neighborhood and he'd be off at work all day long. But whoa, that's not how it turned out.
Yeah. And when did you get married?
I got married in 1998.
Okay. So 98. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you went to school. Did you study piano? Did you study education or both?
Yes. So I got a full ride scholarship to Weber State for my piano skills. So that was awesome. And so my degree is piano performance. And we had a lot of education classes on how to teach piano to children. And I helped in their piano school there. And then I also took a few business classes. So.
Okay. What caused you to do that? Right? Because some people, they're just so laser focused on something like piano that they don't study business. And I'm asking this for a selfish reason, kind of, because I've told my kids, hey, study what you want to study. Like, for instance, right now, a lot of them want to become writers. And I'm like, that's great. You can study English, but also take business classes because they'll always help you. So that was so smart of you to do that. What caused you to make that choice?
You know, it's funny that you say that because it's exactly what my music professors at the university said not to do. They asked me why I was doing that. They said I was crazy taking all these business classes and communications, a lot of computer classes. And they're like, you're not going to need that. Like, that doesn't make any sense. And I loved them. I loved computers. I felt like they could complement each other. You know, I wanted to be an organized home piano teacher. I thought it'll help me be more organized and be a better teacher if I don't have to stress about collecting money or knowing how to do the books and all those things.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And you're certainly organized, and we'll get into that a lot more as we go along because that was a big part of your success that I was able to see firsthand. So that's fascinating. It was just something that was an interest of yours, and you had people telling you not to do it. Was that because you were at a level that they thought you're going to be a concert pianist? Or what drove them to say, don't do this?
Well, I guess bragging a little bit is I had won like multiple awards that were first in the state of all students that were studying music for my teaching ability. And I was a good piano teacher, and a music degree takes a lot of time. It's a lot of credits, and most people don't have time to do other classes, but I did. And I went to school during the summer and took heavy loads, and I liked it, and I am so glad I did. I wish I could say I knew exactly why I did it, but it worked out.
Yeah. And even if it hadn't turned into an entrepreneurial thing, it would have helped with just teaching kids.
Yeah. Everyone should take some business classes. I mean, just to do your home budgets and work a computer to help with the PTA. Like, I mean, I feel like I've got a lot of skills that people are always tapping into for things outside of professional.
So I know that you were interested in pursuing that and you were doing so good with that, but where did the idea first begin that you think maybe I should make a business out of this? Maybe it should be just a little bit more than being a concert pianist or being a piano teacher.
Right. Well, I think lots of things that happen in your life, it's not that you chose it. Maybe something happened on the outside that made you do it. So here's what was happening that kind of made me turn drastically from thinking home-based little piano teacher, you know, to business, here we go. And what happened is my husband decided he didn't want to do dental school. So then I was starting to teach more and more kids, and the city actually shut me down. I was too big for doing.
File a business license. You didn't.
No, I did. I did it that legit way. But I guess a business license doesn't cover you hiring multiple teachers and maybe using your bedrooms and family rooms as other studios to teach piano in. And right. So they said I just had too much traffic for what was considered a home-based business for what my license was. And they came and delivered a cease and desist letter to my door.
Okay. Because it was a zoning issue.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Because you had too many customers coming to your house. Okay, yeah. That makes more sense that would occur.
Yes. Okay. So that was kind of the path we had to go. Am I doing this and going commercial and getting out of a home, or am I going to downsize?
You've read my book, The Focus Business.
Oh, yeah.
And one of the things that I talk about is I compare entrepreneurs to superheroes. And just like superheroes, they have origin stories. So for instance, there's Destiny, that's like Wonder Woman, Superman. There's Decision, that's like Batman. But I think you came out of two other origin stories, which is adversity. That's like the Iron Man story, right? Things were hard, but also accident. That's the Spider-Man story. You've been bit by a spider, and the yes. next thing you know, you're a superhero. And it sounds like it was a little bit of adversity, a little bit of accident that caused you to start being a business owner.
Absolutely. Because I mean, no one I knew taught piano in a commercial location and was able to make it. And so it definitely wasn't by example. It wasn't by what I thought could happen. It was like, I either have to do this or stop teaching because I'm so big. So yeah, accidental, a spider bite. That sounds about right.
I want to pause before we move into that story, though, because I think that there are elements of being a teacher, which also is by extension a coach, that create a successful business. So before we talk about the evolution of that business, talk to me a little bit about what your philosophy is and was as a teacher. Obviously, you were doing something right because you were attracting lots of people. So what were you doing that was different?
I think I was offering unique things in a piano lesson that other people weren't. So for example, you know, most people think when you buy a sandwich, you just put meat and bread, right? That's a sandwich, maybe some cheese. But I definitely was adding like the pickles and the relish and the fancy avocados.
What does that mean specifically in a teaching environment?
It means that I was incorporating computers. So they would have their typical piano lesson, but then they would go and do some music programs on a computer. They would be doing some, it's called theory, but workbooks is a good word for everyone. And so their lesson was including more than just that FaceTime with a teacher. It was so much more. And I did monthly master classes, and, you know, I had card games that I would play with the kids at these master classes just to make it fun and engaging. So I'd kind of trick him into learning. And I think that's what made it different.
And that was unique compared to other piano teachers in
Absolutely.
The area?
Yeah. Your typical piano teacher is show up, have a 30-minute lesson, go home. It's been fun. So mine were an hour and included a lot more.
I love that you added enhancements to the experience, that you were actively looking for ways not only to make it different, but also to really help your students learn.
Right, right.
Talk to me about, in general, your philosophy as a teacher. What I mean by that is, like, as a coach, there's a certain approach that I take to things, right? I have a certain philosophy of how I help people be successful. What in your mind helps a student learn and internalize what you're teaching?
I think they have to know that, I mean, teaching first and foremost is always, the student needs to know their teacher loves them. Like, it is, it's relationship based, right? But then second, the teacher has to convince them that this is fun. You know, this is what you want to do. This isn't me talking you into cleaning your room. This is me going, hey, look at this cool song. Let's do this. Let's play the songs you want to play off the radio or whatever it is that makes you excited. Then let's do it. And so I think convincing them that this is fun, they've got to have buy-in. It's the teacher's job to get a student to have buy-in.
Yeah. And I want to pause here for people who are listening to this and saying, wait, I'm not here to learn about being a teacher. But those kinds of things that you were doing, like making things fun, that carried over into your philosophy of running a business.
Oh,
right?
Absolutely. Like, your employees, they have to have buy-in to what you're trying to get them to do. I mean, your children doing chores at home, if you're a mom, you know, you've got to have buy-in. Like, it, everything. You've got to tell people why it's good for them, and you've got to understand why they're doing it in the first place, and then adjust it to be a win-win situation. Win-win situations are the best for everyone.
My philosophy too, when you're talking about the why, is that every person's why is a little bit different from each other, right? You've got to customize your approach to motivating employees or motivating someone that you're teaching.
Absolutely. Yes. I mean, and they're drastically different, especially when you're working with adults and employees. Like, you've got everything under the sun of they love working for you because of your cause, to they need a paycheck, to they like your schedule. I mean, everything. You've got to figure out
why. So they like they're friends with the people that are working around.
Yes. Coworkers. That's huge. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. And understanding that for each individual. I know we had a lot of conversations through the years about that particular principle.
Right.
So let's go back to the story. Here's the moment of decision or the moment of truth, right?
Yes.
The city comes. You can't do this anymore. Too many people are coming to your house. That's a crossroads for you, right, Angie? And what did you go through to make the decision to get bigger?
Well, it was huge because at that point, it was starting to support our family, but Mike was still working full time, just doing construction. And at that point, if I was going to work, you know, and go commercial, I needed to work full time and justify this payment of a commercial building. And so we decided early on in our marriage that he would be Mr. Mom and I would be the career mom, I guess, career working lady. And we switched roles. We made a conscious decision at that time to switch roles. And he started working more part-time and I started working full-time plus. And we literally had to, I mean, I know the line is beg, borrow, and steal, but we didn't steal money from everyone that we knew to come up with, you know, down payment to be able to do this building.
But you did borrow.
Oh,
right?
Absolutely.
So was that absolutely bank loans? Was that friends and family? Like, where did that come from?
We had to start with friends and family. We were a young married couple. We didn't really have anything.
How young at this point?
Let's see. So this would have been...
Your first business was 2003.
2003 is when we opened that location. So this is 2002 as we're, you know, making these decisions, trying to open that first location. Yeah.
So just 4 years out of college.
Yeah.
And I've met Mike several times. He's such a nice guy. And really, I think a big part of your success is also his support.
Amen. Yes.
Yeah.
He is my number one cheerleader.
Yeah. I wouldn't nearly have the same success that I've had without my wife's support as well.
Right.
Was there any difficulty in, I mean, as you said, as to use the phrase you used, you switched the role. So he was in a different role. Was there any difficulty of making that transition?
Oh, yeah. And there were difficulties throughout the next 20 years is, I think naturally, you mentioned I'm more organized, which I'm also more of a clean freak. So cleaning was an issue. I'm like, honey, I can't come home to this messy house, you know? But no, so there's always things. And if I was home, I may have done this, or maybe I would have volunteered doing this at school, and he didn't necessarily want to do those things, or, you know, yes, definitely. Just like I think any man versus woman, we do things differently. And so, yeah, there were some bumps for sure.
But it sounds like whenever you had those bumps is that you communicated with each other.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which all too often I see, not just in situations like this, but in many situations, spouses harbor a little resentment. They want someone to say something, but they don't tell them what it is that they want. And that just can compound the problem. It sounds like you've had a different pattern of working together.
Yeah, I would attribute that to date night. We've always been good about date night, whether it's a movie at home or going out to dinner, but we talk and we like to talk. And he was the first one to tell me that I'm staying at work too long and I need to get home. So it went both ways.
That's fantastic that he said that. And that is something, in my experience, that every entrepreneur needs to hear from their partner.
Yeah.
Take a break, get away from it. Let's go on a date. That is so critical.
Right. It is. Workaholic is something I think sometimes entrepreneurs are proud about, but it's not really something to be proud about. You need balance.
What you accomplish is what you should be proud about, not the hours that you put in.
Right.
And in fact, we're going to talk about that in a moment, because I remember a conversation we had, but I want to pause. So you're starting the business, 2003, things are taking off. Mm-hmm. Is there a moment during that time that you replay in your mind? We all have these moments in our past and we look back and we say, oh, if I had done this differently, or wow, that was a turning point, and they kind of loop in our brain. Is there a moment like that from that or those early days of your business?
I would have called Dave Crenshaw sooner if I would have known he existed.
Okay, but why? What was happening during that time that made you feel like you should have had a business coach?
Yeah. Sooner? You know, we did have a business coach, but it was more on how to grow your business and get more students, things like that, which was helpful at that time.
Marketing and sales.
Marketing, right? Marketing. But I needed more instruction, and even my business classes at school didn't teach me about systems and creating a plan so you didn't have to do everything. The fact that everyone needed me to get any question answered should have been a red flag early on that I wasn't creating a business, I was creating a monster. And so, yeah, that's what I wish I would have known that early on, because it would have been a lot less pain.
What was causing you to have everything run through you, which is a common issue, right? The entrepreneur becomes the bottleneck. Everything goes to them. For some people, it's ego. For some people, it's a lack of trust. For others, it's control. And others, it's just ignorance. So for you, what do you think was the biggest reason why everything was going through you at that moment?
I'm going to say all of the above.
Okay.
All of the above. Ignorance, for sure. Like, I didn't know a different way. Lacking of trust. I just had a whole bunch of part-time employees. I didn't think anyone was as committed as I would be. So I didn't share the information. I was amazed and impressed with myself. Yeah, a little bit of ego that, oh my gosh, I was a home piano teacher and now I'm so cool. I'm a business with dozens of teachers. So I'm going to say all of those answers is why that happens. It's a mixture.
And there is a little bit of fear too that I put in there, right? That whole feeling of, no one can do it as well as I can. That's a very common phrase. And here's the thing about it with entrepreneurs. To a degree, it's true. Because you care so much, because you have so much experience, they can't do it as well as you can. But in that moment, you have to teach them how to do it. And now we go back to Angie Ford as a teacher, right? Now you're not teaching piano students. Now you're teaching employees.
Absolutely. I think there's also, there was a fear for me of, I had to borrow from family members. They had things on the line for me. There were other people that, it wasn't just my house on the line. It was other people's houses and retirement money that was on the line. And you feel responsible.
Yeah. Did that put a strain on those relationships?
It didn't. I think because the business was successful and I was able to pay them back quickly and everything worked out just exactly how both parties had agreed to originally. We had everything written down. I would always suggest people do that. Do not just borrow money from family without a plan. There was an interest rate. There was a monthly payment. And they could see I was working my tail off. So, you know, it worked out. I'm very thankful for them.
I'm so glad you brought that up. I was going to ask about it and you said it. Was there a contract? Was there an agreement? I cannot tell you how many times I've seen business owners not have those in place, not just for lending money, but if they have a partner in their business, any kind where they're just starting up, it's like, I don't want to be too harsh. I don't want to be too tough on people. We can just have a verbal agreement. And I think I've said this to you several times. A dull pencil is better than a sharp mind, right?
Yes, agreed. It wasn't written up by an attorney, but it was a contract that we got offline and filled in the blanks and had the interest rates. And I really can honestly say, Dave, it made zero impact to our relationship. In fact, I think it improved our relationship because they were on my team for successful Angie makes us both successful.
Right. So daycare was something that you weren't interested in because you were a piano teacher, probably also the simplicity of it. What convinced you, in spite of those reservations that you had about daycare, to go ahead and create it?
Mike and I made a deal. And this was the deal. I had to go to 3 different daycares. And he said, if I didn't think I could do it after I went to 3 different daycares, then he wouldn't bug me about it anymore. We'd just build the Arts Academy and move forward with this second location. So I went, and in the parking lot after visiting the very first one, I called crying to Mike and saying, I'm in, I'll do this because I do know how to teach kids. And I do know what I would want as a mom. And I felt like I could make a difference. And ultimately, that's what I did in life, is make a difference for kids, whether it was teaching them piano or dance or music or watching them while their mom and dad were at work. So,
yeah. It's interesting you said that you didn't want to do daycare initially, because I know later on, making a difference in daycare and elevating the experience for everyone, for the parents, for the teachers, for the kids, that was a huge motivator for you.
Yes.
So
huge.
That was something that you gained later on.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And I said, you know, years later, I would tell my story, and I still say today, I love, love, love my daycare kids because I felt like they're there 10 hours a day, whereas a piano student's there 30 minutes a week. I had the opportunity to make a much bigger difference to the kids that were in the daycare than I did the piano students. And again, that's what it's about, making a difference.
No matter what your career is, your foundation of success begins with one thing: effective time management. And thanks to the generosity of Microsoft, you can get my entire course, Time Management Fundamentals, for free on LinkedIn Learning. Go to davegift.com to get your free access now. This is the course that millions around the world have used to become more productive and reduce stress. Everyone from Fortune 500 executives to freelancers to students. Now, it's the same coaching I've provided in person for tens of thousands of dollars per day, but you can get it for free on LinkedIn Learning. You don't need to provide anything to access it. No credit card, no email. Just go to davegift.com and start learning. Thank you so much, Microsoft and LinkedIn Learning, for your partnership. davegift.com.
So let's go back again, draw a parallel. You're a piano teacher, you're adding things in, right? You're creating a different experience. You're giving them the stuff on the computer and you're having the masterclass and you're having all these fun little things that you're adding in that makes it more. So what were the things that you did with daycare that made it more than what it typically is or was?
Well, because of the first part of my business, I had things like dance studios and tumbling gyms. And so our daycare kids could go up and do a little fitness class in the tumbling gym. I had dance instructors come into the daycare and do a little dance class with them. You know, we had multiple playgrounds. I believed in choices and movement and not stuck in a room all day. And I gave them a wow experience.
That's fantastic. Okay, so I'm going to bring up a turning point in your career that I remember quite well because it involved me and you meeting together. And you were at the time working a lot of hours, right? How many hours were you working prior to us connecting? The number 60. I have in my head is 60.
Yeah, right? I'd say 60. It's so embarrassing.
Well, don't be embarrassed because I think a lot of people listening to this will say 60. That's not that bad, right? Because there are some jobs where people are working 80 or more. So, but for you, 60 was high, plus you're a mom, right?
Right.
With how many kids at that time? Four?
Yeah, I was at four. Yep.
Yeah. So, you know, Mike's trying to hold it together. You're working 60 hours. The business is running you, right?
Yes.
You're not running the business. It's running you. And I remember we met. I can't remember exactly how we – oh, I know how we met. I was speaking at an event and we connected there. And then we decided to do the boot camp, which for those who are new to this show or don't know me very well, it's the same material that you'll find on my LinkedIn Learning course, Time Management Fundamentals. It's all there, everything I taught Angie. And we set things up. We had a date set aside where you and I were going to work together. And you called me. Do you remember this?
Yeah.
You called me the night before.
Yep.
And what did you say? You called and you're like, Dave, I can't do this. I feel like this is going to be a waste of time. I'm too busy. I can't set aside the time to do it.
Oh, and because you wanted me to set aside like a whole day or 2 days or something.
Yeah, 2 days.
I can't remember. 2 days? Oh, yeah. I remember. And I was like, he's crazy. There is no way I can set aside 2 days.
Right, right. And if I recall correctly, I was like, Angie, we just need to do it. You got to trust me. If this doesn't work out, if it doesn't do what you expected to do, I'll give you your money back.
Yeah.
But we've got to do it. You just got to plow through. And then you did it.
I did.
And then over time, and there's a long story because we were working for together, but you went from 60 to 40 to 20 to pretty much nothing in terms of your working hours.
Correct. It's true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it all started with you making a decision to get in control of your personal time management.
Yeah.
And that's so critical because you cannot help other people who are working for you. You cannot get control of your life and your business until you personally have control of yourself and how you're devoting your time.
Right. And it all starts from the top. Like they follow your example. If you're stressed at the top, then your employees are stressed. And when I stopped working as much because things were more under control and things were planned and we had systems, they enjoyment for their job went up. Crap goes downhill, but so does the good stuff.
Right. And the example that you set as a leader changes everything. And that's also part of the reason why it's so important for you to get control of that time management, because they're going to follow your example. And if you're out of control working 60, 70, 80 hours a week, guess what your employees are going to do? You can talk about work-life balance, but it doesn't make a difference if you don't personally have it.
I think it made my top people that worked closest with me almost made them feel guilty if they weren't at work when I was at work, you know? And that's not a healthy thing for any employee to guilt them into working more because the boss is working so much. No.
Right. Okay, so let's make another connection between the past and where we are now in this journey of you building your business. You started out as someone who liked to organize things and be an organized piano teacher, and you enjoyed that sort of thing. Talk to me about what you did in your business to start taking control and organize things. What were some of the steps that you took to do that?
I think step number one was just get it on paper, get it out of my head. Whether it was taking the time to write down how I did this or what I expected with this or what the policy was with this, it couldn't verbally come from me. It needed to come through a document or later I loved videos even more because they got it from me, but yet I didn't have to say it 500 times of the core of why my business was created and why we do what we do the Bravo way.
Right. Yeah, that's a great phrase, though, the Bravo way, which is, and you can use in your own business, whatever phrase you want to use, but basically it's, this is what we do. This is how it's done. And I do love, especially now, I know we started with documentation and later went to video. I love video now because like you said, as the business owner, it's a way to replicate yourself without having to go to each individual person and repeat yourself 100 times.
Absolutely. And it works great for your customers too. I mean, parents would come up to me. We had thousands of students, right? And so parents would come up to me and see me in the hall and they'd be like, oh, you're the owner. And they felt like they knew me, they'd connected with me because they'd seen the videos. I'd send out the whatever welcome video or the, you know, events coming up video. And videos are a great way. I highly recommend videos. Don't shy away from videos.
Yeah. It's almost like Disney, right? It's like keeping Walt alive.
Yes.
He's long gone, but he's still a part of it. He still is in the feel of everything.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
It took you a little bit of time to get comfortable with video as a medium, right?
Yes. Yes, for sure. I had to do a lot of videos. And I think some things I learned about videos, I think it just the shorter, the better. Especially when you're just trying to get it out to like your customers aren't going to watch a long video. So 2 minutes or less was always a good like teaching video, trying to get the information out to the masses.
Yeah, that's a great way to do it. Another thing that you did to take control of your business was actually bring people on in important leadership roles, right? So not only were you delegating the individual day-to-day processes to daycare teachers, but you also hired leaders. Talk to me about how you did that and what the process was to determine who would make a great leader for Bravo.
So yes, I hired them, but I did love to grow them. That was my favorite thing is to grow those people that walked in my door and became a teacher and then let them grow into department leaders and then into directors. And so I think some of the things that I did for that is training courses. Like there were different levels and different training courses that they could choose to participate in, and they would get different rewards here and there. But those were definitely the people that were showing they wanted to keep learning. So those are the people that I'd give opportunities for growth and management.
Yes. And you hit on something right there. They showed they wanted to. The word I use is trait. They have the trait of someone who wants to be a leader, because not everyone possesses that trait. That's neither good nor bad. It's just the reality of who people are. How did you identify someone who wanted to grow into that role?
I think through different opportunities we'd try to give teachers. For example, each month we'd do a training, and if there was a teacher that was performing really well, we'd say, hey, would you like to do 10 minutes of training on such and such because we've noticed how great you are at doing that? Wow. And
so you'd give them an opportunity to lead first, like a small opportunity.
Yes, a small controlled opportunity. And if they were like, no way, Jose, I don't want to talk in front of people, I might try to encourage. But if they were like hardcore, no way, I'm not going to talk to people in a group, then that was kind of a determining factor that I probably didn't think they could grow with me, because that is part of being a leader is talking in groups and training people. But if they would try it and, you know, go for it, and then we'd give them another little bite, right? It's like a little bite, a little bite, a little bite. It's just like teaching a child, teaching an adult, the same thing. You just give them more and more opportunity.
I like it. And as they showed that they grew, you just continue to give them more opportunities to grow.
Right. And there's so many ways you can give your employees opportunities. I mean, online LinkedIn courses, you know, that's great. You can do mini conferences. You can send them to a conference, networking. I would let my employees go to my friends' daycares in the area and do a tour. I'd tell my friend they were coming and let them check out other things that were happening out there and get ideas.
You just brought something to mind that I want to highlight that I had forgotten about you, but now I remember. You have always been so open in helping other businesses succeed. I think sometimes when someone thinks, oh, you got to be an entrepreneur, it's cutthroat and you got to compete and you got to tear everybody down. But you regularly let other daycare businesses come in and watch what you're doing and learn systems, and you would mentor some people, right?
Yes. I was having it happen so much and I loved giving back that I ended up just doing it once a month. So I would book a once a month time where they could come in, they would call me, I would answer any question under the sun. I would open my books to them, and I didn't care if they were, you know, my competition down the street or three states over. You know, it didn't matter to me that people flew in all the time to come and see our facility and see how we did things.
And I think you did that because that's who you are. You're very generous of spirit with those sort of things. But I find that when we do things like that, we always get something back in return, even if that's not our intent. What did you gain from helping these other businesses?
I've always agreed with being at the top, like the top of your org chart, is a little bit of a lonely space. And, you know, you can't really hang out with your employees or, I don't know, there's a certain line, right? A line of professionalism that we need to keep, even though they're your friends, there's a limit of that friendship. But it's nice to connect and network, because some of those people became some of my dear friends over the years, and people that I could call and commiserate with or share the joy of a great day with. And so I think friendships is a great thing. And through friendships, then you always get more ideas. And knowledge is power, right? Connections to maybe not even another business owner, but one of my connections got me to my financial planner, and he was instrumental in us making this transition of, you know, selling the business. So yeah, it all works out. I love that analogy of, you know, you can hold a whole bunch of sand in your hand, but as soon as you close your hand, think how much less sand you can hold if you just try to grab onto things so tight. It's always better to keep your hand open and to give. You can hold more sand, which benefits everyone.
That's such a beautiful metaphor. Thank you for sharing that. All right. One last question. So you're now out.
Yep.
Right? How'd you do that? That's what everybody wants to know. How'd you build the business to the point where you can exit it and sell it to someone else?
You have to get to a place where you're not the business. That's the only reason your business is sellable. If, you know, everyone was coming in because Angie Ford was there, then you can't sell your business because Angie Ford can't ever leave. But the minute that Angie Ford wasn't there anymore and the business was still profitable and successful and doing great things, you have a sellable business and everybody will want that. We decided to sell and we had three offers. In fact, the minute one person found out about our business was going for sale, they made a full price offer within 10 minutes. And you wonder, did I sell it for enough? I don't know. But we already posted it higher than we thought we'd get. So, you know, we were thrilled with it. They were thrilled with it. But I had a good reputation for doing it the right way. And they wanted to have a part of that and combine their business into mine.
Yeah. I mean, you had so many sellable assets. Obviously, the land, the buildings, those sort of things.
Yes.
But as you said, you had a business that was not dependent on you. You had systems, you had documentation, you had videos, you have a whole training process and a hiring process. And that's really where the value is to a potential buyer.
Absolutely.
Yeah. You put in the work to create those assets.
Yes, it was great because the new owners, once they bought the business, they would still call me here and there with questions, you know, at that first part of the transition. And at the beginning, they'd say, how did you do such and such? And I'd say, oh, there's a system. Look on this report. It's linked there. And they'd ask me another question. And I'd be like, oh, there's a system. It's on such and such. Look there. And then the next phone calls after a little while started becoming, where's the system for? And I just love that, because I'm like, okay, you're getting it. There is a system. I've written everything down for you that you need. You just need to know where to look for it.
That's perfect. All right, Angie. So here's the point where I like to summarize action items. So things that someone who's listening to this, they can actually do something about it. Or if my kids are listening to it, they can pick something. So what I do is I highlight a few of them, and then I'll ask you to add something that maybe I missed. And if you're listening to this show, the goal is to pick one. Don't try to do all of these. That's too many. Just pick one of these. But here are some things that I picked up from Angie's story. The first thing that I would say is the power of communicating with your partner. Angie, with all of the work and all the success that she had, a big part of that was the fact that she communicated with her husband, Mike, and they'd have regular conversations, and they came up with a way that they would work together. And even, you know, later on, when it was about getting the second location and him pushing Angie toward the daycare, those were all powerful moments. And the fact that they continued their relationship, they were going on dates, they were talking with each other, and they still do, is a huge part of her success. So I think that's, you know, value your partner and communicate with them. The second thing that I got out of this, and this was, do more than the normal. Do special things that the competition doesn't do. I wrote down the word spark. Just having a spark of something that's a little different and stands out, that's a big part of the reason why Bravo is successful, why Angie's been successful. And then the third thing is be organized and document, right? Angie talked about the Bravo way and how everything was written down and they used video to create systems. Anything that you're trying to accomplish, even if you're not an entrepreneur or a business owner, you can create a pattern for yourself to follow at work or in your daily life and write it down. Make a record of it. It's so much easier to follow that. There's so many lessons here, Angie, but those are three. Anything that you would add to this?
I think one of the big lessons I wish I would have learned early on is to focus on balance. There does need to be balance in everything, and it's never healthy to be 90% of your energy in one place and 10% in another. Like, there should be balance. And when I retired and sold the business, I was surprised how hard it was for me to find hobbies. I didn't have other things that I enjoyed doing outside of work, and it was a struggle. And I think that, you know, we should have better balance within our lives. I just think it would make us more healthy. And I think I would have had a little bit less mom guilt if I would have balanced between work and being a mom a little bit better.
Making that a priority.
Yeah.
And coming up with a plan for that.
Yes.
Which is something that you did over time. That's fantastic. Yep. Angie, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
It's been so much reconnecting with you and remembering these stories. And I'm so thrilled with the success that you've been able to accomplish, not just with the business, with your family as well. I really enjoyed it.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Thanks for all you've done for me too over the years. It's great to be where I am. It's fun to look back. So thank you for helping me reminisce.
You're welcome. And thank you everyone for listening. Remember, choose one thing. Pick one thing that you're going to do as a result of what you heard. It's not just about learning. It's not just about hearing great things. It's about taking one action. So take one action this week on what you learned from Angie Ford.
You've been listening to the Dave Crenshaw Success Project, hosted by my dad, Dave Crenshaw, and produced by Invaluable Incorporated. Sound editing was done by my brother, Stratton Crenshaw. Research and assistant production by Victoria Bidez. Voiceover by me, Darcy Crenshaw. And the music is by Ryan Brady via Pond 5 Licensing. Please subscribe to the Dave Crenshaw Success Project on Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you like to get your podcasts. And please don't forget to leave us a 5-star review. See you next time.